It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now. It's a golden fall morning in the sleepy lakeside town of Sunapee, New Hampshire. This is about the last place I'd expect to find one of the biggest rock stars on our planet. Before he became music legend Steven Tyler, he was Steven Tallarico, a skinny, rambunctious boy who spent every summer of his childhood helping his parents manage a handful of vacation cabins they rented to tourists. In his best-selling memoir, Does the Noise in My Head Bother You?, Steven says it was here, in his beloved Sunapee, where his spirit was born. What a perfect setting for our surprising and open-hearted conversation.
Howdy!
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 Oprah Winfrey at my house!
I brought flowers from my house to your house.
Oh, my God.
I cut these myself yesterday in my garden to bring to you. Mwah. Yes. Yeah, so you take one. I love this place.
Right?
I do.
I knew you would.
I love this place.
Okay.
I love this place.
It's a little nook.
It's a little nook.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it is so un-rockstar like. I gotta tell you.
That's the other side of me.
It's the other side.
We're gonna find out about
that. We're gonna find out about that side of you. Well, we can put these down someplace. We'll
put
them in the house.
Let's put them down right
over
here.
Okay, good. Let's put them down.
Beautiful.
Good. How's that?
Beautiful.
Well, tell me about this place. Is this, you know, I read your book.
Uh-huh.
And as I'm driving, I went, there's the harbor! Actually, the harbor's smaller than I imagined from the way you described it in the book.
Very country, very small.
Very country, very small.
Mm-hmm.
This is where
and
you're...
That's why, you
yeah.
know? That's why all of this is like, it's a place that you can grab onto.
Uh-huh.
And there's so much God here and so much life on life's terms here.
Uh-huh. This isn't where you grew up, because where you grew up actually is like where they like little cottages. That's the way you described
it
in the book. Like
yeah.
And then you bought this.
And then I bought this, yeah.
Yeah.
I would drive by and I'd look down and I'd see down, and it was an enclave, and it was a little nest. And this house was there, but it never looked like this. But the dock was, and the trees were, and especially the rocks.
I'm so glad to be here.
So glad you're here.
Thank you for letting me come here. You know, it's really special when somebody lets you inside the space that really is private and belongs to them in a way that people don't normally see you. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
So calming. How can you...
You know, I wake up every morning
and
I walk down over here like that, and I go up those stairs and I jump right off the top of that into the water. And that's my good morning plunge.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So how long have you had the house, Steven?
God, 26 years.
Wow.
And you know, it's one of those places that because you're on tour, we never really go anywhere. We're always everywhere else, you know.
Uh-huh.
So this is always that winter place that we'd come up to and, you know, have somebody shovel out the snow and come down and light a fire.
Yeah, but in winter, nobody's here. I remember in the book you described standing at the harbor once when you were like a kid and nobody was there.
Nobody.
Because this is deserted in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And everybody that's it's deserted now, listen. You know, usually boats are going up and down and sailboats and people and kids laughing. But, you know, and I never experienced that when people left. And I got separation anxiety. I woke up one morning and I realized that the sidewalks were rolled up.
Ah, because everybody's gone.
Yeah, and I think I was 17.
Yeah.
And I thought about being a man. And what am I going to do? I have to get a job. and sustain, you know, this thing called life. I'd never put it together, and it was like,
But I love, too, when you were saying that, you know, everybody else was going off to be a man. People in high school were going off to be, become a man, to do the man thing. But you weren't thinking about that at all.
No. I had such a beautiful home life with Aunt Phyllis and Uncle Ernie and...
Linda.
Linda, she's here, and...
And your dad. Know. I'm so sorry to hear about your dad. But 95, come on. 95. Yeah.
Stephen's father, Victor Tallarico, passed away just days before I arrived. Victor was a professional pianist. Like his only son, Victor devoted his entire life to music. Stephen and his sister Linda buried their father next to their mother, Susan, here in Sunapee.
We were all in the room with him when he took his last breath.
What was
just
that
last
like?
Week.
What was that like?
I heard him make a noise, and it was like... You know, it's still hard to explain. It was such a loss. We were all sitting there and crying up a storm. And, you know, it was just for every breath he took three breaths. And then he'd hold it for 30 seconds. And then take three breaths again. And then it would be held again for 45 seconds. And then it was the last one. It was a whole hour of that. So it was...
So for every breath you're holding, wondering, is this going to be the last one?
It's going to be the last. And... You know, I got to sleep with him the night before and hold his hand and talk to him and everything, and it was just, you know, I've never done that before. I've been told that to be with somebody when they die is one of the most important things you can do on the planet to help them out.
Well, that's what I've heard. So that's what I wanted to know. Was it that way for you? Did it feel that way?
It felt that way. It was a piece of me that didn't want to go through all that, didn't want to hear all that. And it was a piece of me that knew that I need to be there with Dad. And then when every second was, it changed. I realized the family was with me, 12 people. And then I was alone with him like this, listening to my daddy take his last breath. And it was just so, you know, it was that. Now I can intellectualize about it, but it was just pure feeling, pure emotion that Daddy's going right now. It was so, so hard.
What was the last thing you said to him?
I love you, Dad. The last thing I said, I heard him he held his breath for 45 seconds. And when it got to 45 seconds, I was like, so, you know, and I went, Mom, here comes Daddy. And then I thought, he took another breath again. I thought, oh, Jesus, did I? Because Mom passed away two years ago. And I just said, Mom, Daddy's coming to you. And, you know, I tried to be that spiritual guy, but that, my emotions took over way, way too much. I mean, I love my daddy so much. I wonder what it'd be like when your mommy and daddy are gone.
Like, I've heard people who say when they've lost their parents, do you feel like you've lost your anchor?
Yes and no, because I afforded myself the last year, wherever I was able to come leave it and just stop on a dime. People were lending me their planes and come see Dad, so I got to re-up my relationship with him again, and he was there but not. One day he'd be playing the piano because he was a classical pianist. And the next day, you know, he wasn't there at all. And I just, every time I think of Dad, I thank God of this whole last year that I got a chance to be close to him. That's the part.
Yeah.
Things I never thought about.
That's what matters. Did you get a chance to say everything you wanted to say?
Yeah.
Yep. Feel everything you wanted to feel?
Yeah.
This, I could see where you could, you would come home to this. Right? Yep, I'll see.
And swim out to these rocks and just sit there. This has been a beautiful year, except for the bittersweet of having the family there because my dad passed. You know, Liv said, you know, I've never been with my sisters and brothers when my mom passed upstairs. She said that. And, you know, imagine that we live these kind of lives, you and I, that we're in the tail of a comet, right? And when we stop and we really do feel the family, I feel bad I do what I do. I feel bad I left, you know, Mia and my first wife here. I left him here, I abandoned him. I was on drugs, but also went on tour. And then I'd come back here and think, oh my God.
Why did I leave?
You know.
Let's go in time.
Why did I ever leave?
It's all okay.
It is, isn't it?
It's really all okay.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Boy, this looks like a family lives here. is like a family lives here. A rock star family, but a family,
We just added
leopard.
That.
Yeah, just added the leopard thing.
Mm-hmm. We just did.
It was
not so good before that.
Really?
Looks good now. This piano
this is
right
cool.
here.
Yeah,
this piano. When the band first started, I bought one of those. If remember, you read in the book about me finding a suitcase by the side, and I opened the suitcase. It was full of dirty rocks, ounce of marijuana.
Yeah.
And it's $1,800. I bought that.
That's what you did?
Some guy up here, we stopped. That's why it's so magical up here. We stopped at the gas station. The guy says, I have your old piano. I said, excuse me? He goes, yeah, I have the piano that you wrote Dream On. It says Aerosmith on the top. And I went, well, where is it? And I went over and looked, and he wound up giving it to me because it guilted him to death. That's it.
He didn't make you pay thousands and thousands of dollars to get it back?
No, he was a really nice
guy. That's a good guy.
Local,
country
boy.
There's
the magic.
There's the magic. And how long has this piano been here?
My dad gave me this. It's a super long. It's 8-footer. So it's got phenomenal bass. And
He used to play here all the time?
Yeah, he played here, yeah. He always wanted a tune before he came in. And he was playing here 5 months ago, four months ago, yeah.
Really?
Yep. But he wasn't playing this.
Okay. He wasn't playing this.
My manager told me, oh, who was in the house? Oh, who was in the house? Oh, who was in the house? I gotta finish this.
Oh, look at the diamond.
I will finish that.
You will finish it. Oprah's in the house.
Oh, yeah. Oprah in the house.
Oprah's in the house.
Don't go anywhere. More to come after this short break.
No two travelers are exactly alike, and that means no two trips should be either. Texas' vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. Are you a beach person? Well, you'll be having fun under the sun with Texas' 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies can't get enough of Texas' world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
1 in 8 start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
All right, let's go sit down.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me in your house.
Oh,
this is so cozy, so warm. I would love this on a cold, rainy day.
Mm-hmm. Right? Fireplace going.
Yeah. Yeah. The outside for all the sunny days. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. And the fireplace goes along the whole wall.
Yep.
Love, 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 love. Love, love, love. This is what I love about you. You understand ultimately that we are all just transmitting energy, mm-hmm. that you are an electromagnetic field. You talk a lot about that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it, when you walk into a room, do you think the energy charge, what is that energy charge that you're emitting?
I think it's being willing to be a receptor.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I look at somebody, I have a whole problem today with judging. I'm not supposed to judge, however, when I look into people's eyes, I feel something from them. It's an unspoken thing. I can feel their energy and I get something. And I understand where they're coming from and all kinds of stuff before they even speak, but I think it's because I'm open. I think it has to do with us being willing, not to mention you're a magical being. I feel it from you already. I think before you were Oprah and got all famous, I think I would have sensed that from your being. It's your personality. Not everybody's born like that with it. But you went and ran with it.
Yeah.
And so did I.
Let's talk about running with it. When you were growing up around here, was there a part of you that sensed that this would be a place to come home to, but this would not be your life?
definitely. I first grew up here and had all those feelings about the water and the smell. I went out in a canoe before and I was paddling in by myself and the smell off the lake. And this is the true Stephen. That is it. Looking for a little beach here, and that's why I bought this property. It's like, you know, 15 feet of beach. And the feeling in the woods. And so then I left at 18, 19 to rock and roll out. And wound up taking so many drugs that alter your stuff that, you know, I thought I was taking this with me. Because every time I smoked a joint, I felt like I was up on the chairlift at Mount Sunapee. You know what I mean? Every time I would do whatever other drug, I felt like I was underwater here, you know, look, you know, at the fish and all this. I was trying to recreate it. So when I'd come back here, I felt it again, and it was such a pull because by then I had been addicted to the dark side or the light side.
May I say, I am surprised you're still alive. I am just, you know, when I read your book, I don't know of another who has taken more drugs, has done more stuff, has lived outside of yourself more than you.
You know, it used to be cool to hear that. Now it kind of hurts.
It does?
A little bit. I mean, I have a little shame about, you know, not being as wide-eyed open like this while that was going on, like during the 70s. And by the time the 80s hit, I was just full-blown doing stuff that...
Are you surprised you're alive?
Yeah, I am. I used to hate people that said, this last run, I was on a nighttime sleeping drug and drugs for my feet because of the operations I had, because I have to walk around and it hurts to walk. So I was on those drugs and just that little bit, it makes you like this. Whereas you and I are peripheral visionaries. And damn it, what was I doing this for? Was it more comfortable? Heroin, you know, is like putting, it's like I've got a chinchilla, it's like putting a coat on, a cloak of fur. Heroin, you make you just feel so comfortable in a world of doing Madison Square Garden, coming off stage and getting pecked to death like chickens. It's a comfort to go sniff a little something and go somewhere. And so I just rode that beast, but this last run when I was like falling asleep here in the pit, you know.
The pit being over
the
there.
The pit being right there.
Yeah.
They would say, you know, you're gonna kill yourself. You know, you're gonna be dead tomorrow. And I thought, what? Just fell asleep is what I'd normally do. So it's an adventure. You know what? The drugs for me was falling down the rabbit hole. I know Alice.
You know Alice.
Oh yeah, we had an affair for a long time.
What did drugs do for you that fame and money and adoration and all that comes with being a rock star could not? What did drugs do?
I think made me feel like a rock star before I was one. Because I thought that that's what rock stars did.
Did you always know you were going to be a rock star?
Yeah. Yeah, I told my mom, and as I put in the book, I said, Mom, can I throw bars on the window? I mean, how lofty is that? But
Put bars on the window because the fans are going to be coming in. And she would say,
Oh, she would say, okay, right. And so I lived in that world. You know, and the funny thing is everything I've ever thought of, I've imagined, I've done.
Really?
I've imagined doing this with you before.
Really?
Because it was something I wanted to do. I like you. I loved your show. I loved who you were. I knew you. I knew that this was going to be really comfortable for me. And I knew that I wanted to get something out more than just singing. Because remember, I'm a drug addict alcoholic. I know that there's another album in me. I think there may be another high. I don't know whether I'll survive it. I hope not. I'm so locked and loaded right now in AA and in my program, my 12-step program, that I'm good with it. But yeah, I always...
But that doesn't mean you will never get high again.
No, it doesn't. That's the thing. I know I won't, but it doesn't mean I won't. So I have to be careful about that. So
when you say I know you won't, that means you believe you won't, you think you won't, you don't want to?
Well, I've got, what that means is right now I've set myself up with sponsors. I've got a bunch of great people in my life that are sober as well, that have been to the dark side, lived on the dark side of the moon, and I love them. I've got a great sponsor in LA, I got a sponsor in Boston, and I go to meetings. And I keep it real, and I don't want to go back there or I'll lose it all.
What's the lowest you've been?
79, 81, 82
Yeah,
those years.
Yeah.
I was walking the streets in New York, looking for heroin on 9th Avenue, and in between, stuff had happened so much, you know.
Even as much many drugs as you've been on, and 8 times in rehab, you still don't think drugs are all bad.
Well, no, they can't be. I mean, you know, I'm on Neurontin now for my feet. If I wasn't, I would be losing it. Because it's so painful, that Morton's neuroma.
And why are your feet so bad? Because of wearing...
From dancing around on stage
all those years.
Yeah, they have no toes on that. Feet just have a big fat toe. They're all squished in underneath, you know? And yeah, then my toes are all like this. They took the nerves out of here and here. So after that operation, I simply... This was 2002, 2003. Mm-hmm. After that operation, I was on so many drugs and I didn't give them to someone else to hold. Remember, I'm a drug addict. So next thing you know, I'm in bed like this and I start snorting it. And I got really bummed out and ashamed.
Stephen was sober for 12 years when a string of medical and personal issues brought him back to bad habits. Stephen began suffering the effects of Morton's neuroma. It's a painful nerve condition in his feet. He had surgery but feared he'd never be able to dance on stage again. While he recovered, the band took a year off. For years, Stephen had been infected with hepatitis C. He began undergoing a painful year-long treatment regimen, which cured the illness but left him weakened and sick. As he rehabilitated, another blow. He and his wife of 17 years, Teresa Barrick, split.
So that was 2002. I had hepatitis C, and you know, you shoot the interferon, and I took a lot of more pills than I was supposed to. And the band was taking a year off, and I said, okay, I'll do it. And I started shooting.
To treat your hepatitis C.
To my hepatitis C.
Yes.
Because I'm the kind of guy that jumps in with both feet. Let's do it. So I did. And 3 months in, I got into a row with my wife. She left me, and I was there with the kids alone. And I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I had another boy problem. And I went, wait, what? What? I might not be sexually active anymore, and I have a tumor? I mean, I was just, every night I had to straighten up and go and sleep with the kids and at night after they came back from the nanny and just pretend to be, right? And then my mom passed. You know, there was just a lot of things. Both dogs died. The kids went away to college. This was just in the last year, so it was a 9-year run of things happening. But I wasn't going to meetings and point blank, I'm that good a drug addict. I have to always remember there's a 500-pound gorilla waiting in the parking lot for me. Now, it feels weird saying that after 2 years because I do have it under control now, but I have to always remember that. I have to always remember that. Always, always, always. And, you know, I've always said of all the things I ever lost, I miss my mind the most. It's one of those funny things.
Yeah. What you say in the book is that the drugs take away the peripheral vision.
They do. Makes you myopic.
Makes you myopic. Okay, so what's the difference between walking out on the stage with 30,000 people on drugs and off drugs? On drugs, can you feel them, or do you feel them differently?
When I got sober, I asked myself, why did I even take them on stage? It was just a way of life. You know, I wasn't born this. Remember, I survived the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
If you didn't take LSD in high school, you weren't cool. And we took it. It was so great. We took acid and walked up to the top of Mount Sunapee. Walked. Tasted the wind when it blew. Drank pine tree. You drank it. You could taste the water before you looked at a brook. Oh, yeah, the green smell off the rolling hills. You tasted it. Oh, yeah, some drugs are the greatest. It's just, it's like now I can look at a field full of wildflowers and smell it and taste it just as well. You don't need that, but it was fun back then, and that's what I did. Jimi Hendrix. Excuse me while I kiss the sky. You can't kiss the sky, but, you know, it's that. I wanted to taste everything and see it.
But you're talking about all of these experiences that drugs gave you.
Yeah. But I can do that now with a song.
You can.
I can get so inside of I don't want to miss a thing. When we're in the throes of an emotion, and I'm singing to them, I don't want to miss a thing, and they're singing the words back like this, every word, every nuance. I don't want to kiss one night. I don't want to give one kiss. I just want to be with you, right here with you, just like this. I just want to, and they're singing it back to me full on. It's like making love. When you're singing a song, it's a complete, a song is, lyrics have been worked out. They've been crafted in such a way to mean so much. There's the first verse to set you up. I could lie awake just to hear you breathing. Watch you smile while you're sleeping, so far away and dreaming. It's this complete setup too. I don't want to miss a thing. It's a complete full sentence. It's a lifetime in song if the melody's just right.
If you travel, you know how to really go off the grid. Like no cell service in your room off the grid. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, sound baths, and ice baths. Because when you set up your out of office, you mean it. Because when you're the escape artist, vacation is all about resting, meditating, drinking water, and minding your own businessing. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/you know.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Tell me this, though. How do you do that night after night, year after year, for 40 years, and not be completely controlled by your ego? How does one live a life where you are idolized, you are an American idol, and hold on to yourself?
I don't buy into that lofty, I can't live off the ego. When it comes to things like that, who do I think I am? It's like a gift to me that I get to be that guy on stage. It's not something I earned because I'm that great. It's a gift that I've made contact with him. Mm-hmm. That's an honor. So my ego, it's a gift. When they came, that was the gift, that anyone showed up at all. Mm-hmm. So it's not me. I also know at any moment I could sing a song and it could be the end of my career. Mm-hmm.
But do you feel like a rock star? I mean, I have to say, I have a wonderful life. I love my life. But I would have to say that in the world of, you know, dream things, to be on stage. I had Tina Turner on the show years ago, and we did a song together on stage in Los Angeles. And just looking out at that crowd and seeing the people, I thought, well, isn't this... This is an amazing thing to have happen to you, that people are singing the words to your songs and they're literally, you know, holding you in some kind of reverence.
Well, imagine being in a room full of 20,000 people and they're singing that song and they're singing that chorus, the whole place together. You've gotten everyone on the same page for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. What a miracle that is. Mm-hmm. That's a beyond miracle. And I feel it.
Where did the songs come from?
Well, that one came from Diane Warren. Excuse me. I love Diane.
I do too.
But like Sweet Emotion, Tom was playing doo 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 doo. And I went, Sweet Emotion. It just
came.
Yeah.
Are the songs always there waiting to be uncovered, or do they come in?
Well, the gift my father gave me playing Bach and Beethoven on the piano, I would see that piano, but I grew up under it. Mm-hmm. From 6 months to 8 months on the couch till I could crawl. And I'd go under there and I'd feel very comforting when Dad played Bach and Brahms and Debussy. Mm-hmm. Boom, da ba boo, boo da doo da, ba ba boo ba, ba 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 ba.
And you'd be under?
It sounds like this looks. Mm-hmm. This lake and the water. Ba-da-da-da. See, the water's moving this way. Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's the trees and boathouses and maybe the birds that fly across. It's all a complete sentence. So I learned that living under the piano and hearing that. So I think they used to say, the guy that did the David, Michelangelo, would say,
yes.
It was always there. The rock was in the way. I just chiseled the rock away. The melody's there. I've learned it from my dad, the gift, and it's just waiting. It's like a hanger, and I'm waiting, or a hat, I'm waiting for the just right hat rack to come along, and I know how to fling my hat right onto it.
Aerosmith is the best-selling American rock and roll band in history. Over the past 5 decades, addiction and internal conflict have threatened to tear their group apart. But in 2009, in the middle of a performance in South Dakota, Stephen fell 8 feet off the stage, leaving him with a broken shoulder. He says no one in the band visited him in the hospital, which upsets him to this day. In his book, Stephen says his band was plagued by something he calls the other LSD, lead singer disorder. Let's talk about LSD.
Yes.
Lead singer.
Isn't that the funniest?
Yeah.
Hey.
But you know, when I was reading that, I was thinking, well, yeah, of course. I always wondered, okay, if you're the lead singer of the band, doesn't the rest of the band members sometimes get pissed off with you or jealous or want to know how come my name isn't up there or want to know? Doesn't that happen?
It happens hugely so.
You're the only person I've ever heard talk about it. Because you know, I guess it's an unspoken thing.
It is. They're afraid to. Yeah. I'll tell you flat out. I put myself in their position. You know, when someone comes up and asks for my autograph, because I'm the big lip singer of the band, you know, of Aerosmith, and they don't ask my drummer, I'm so hurt.
You are?
I am so hurt.
So can you imagine?
I'll say, hey, what about him?
Yeah.
I said, you know, but the truth is that they're not as well seen. They're not as, I'm not even an A personality. I'm so beyond that. Yeah, so because of that personality that I am, that I put that out and I'm this dancing bear and all that stuff, I'm the face that they recognize and it hurts them. And in that, I don't think those guys in the band have really looked at that and said, you know what, I'm jealous. Let's call a spade a spade. You know, I was jealous of Joe when girls would come up to him when we first started out. Mm-hmm. I was. So I get it. Every lead singer gets it from the rest of the guys.
Let's talk about forgiveness then. So does it come with you forgiving and them also forgiving? Let's talk about forgiveness and the role that it's played in your life.
It's one of the things now that I've learned is forgiveness is the answer to everything. It's the answer to every problem anyone has. And it's not, some people say, just let it go, Oprah. Let it go. I can't do that. But if someone says, you know what? What if you forgave them? Just do it. Try this. Try to forgive them. Say, I forgive you. And then say, I forgive myself for what I did to you, too. But I forgive you for what you did to me. And I just want to love you. I know it sounds really, you know, or touchy-feely or... stupid, too nice, almost, right? But it's really the answer to everything, forgiveness. When I left Betty Ford after falling off the stage and with all the anger I had against those guys, and boy, do I have some anger.
But the anger wasn't just about falling off the stage.
No, it was angry that they didn't come to the hospital and go, what's wrong with you? Even that would have been fun. I would have felt so healing if they went, what's wrong with you, man? You ruined the tour, man. I know you probably use and, you know, you all right, man? And they said... Well, we didn't come because your manager said to stay away. And I said to one of them, you know what? If it was at the White House, I'd have gotten through the grounds to come in and see you. Mm-hmm. I just said that.
Yeah.
And so it was...
Because the bottom line is, you fell off the stage, they didn't come see you, and what you wanted to know, you know, is what I always say, and I've said all these years, everybody wants to know that I matter.
Yeah.
You want to know that you mattered, that you're falling off the stage. Mattered, that somebody cared, that not somebody, that your bandmates cared that that happened to you. Isn't that the truth?
I guess that's it. When you boil it right down to it, I wanted them to come to me and, are you all right?
Yes, are you all right?
But you know what I did?
What?
I called a band meeting and I wanted my band. I wanted to tell them something I'm about to tell you. What? I sat there with them. I begged for their forgiveness. I said, will you forgive me for falling off the tour stage and ruining the tour? Will you forgive me for that? And they said, yes.
You got it.
I got it.
And they said, I forgive you.
And after now it's been 2 years, now the most amazing miracles happened. We're back to the way we were back then. We're going to go back on tour again. Everyone's clear again.
Rock legend Steven Tyler calls his 4 children the loves of his life. His oldest daughter, actress Liv Tyler, was born after an affair with model Bebe Buell. Stephen became a grandfather when Liv had her son, Milo. Stephen married his first wife, Sarinda Fox, here at Lake Sunapee. Together, they had Mia, now a model. After 9 years of marriage, Stephen and Sarinda divorced. She died of a brain tumor at age 50. Stephen's second marriage to Teresa Barrick lasted 17 years. They had two children, 22-year-old Chelsea and 19-year-old Taj.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned, you said, my wife left me. Were you a good person to be married to?
I wanted the dream. I knew I could get anything as long as I could imagine it. And I saw a picket fence and
A lake,
just all of it. When I brought my first wife, Sarinda, here, I brought her, it was freezing cold January, I brought her in the Jeep out here to this house, the lake was frozen, pulled up like this, the lights were out, moon. Drove all the way out here and I went, okay, open your eyes. And actually her eyes were closed all the way to here and I said, close your eyes. And I turned the brights on. I said, now open them. And here was the house. And I married her. And we had Mia. Mm-hmm. And then I abandoned them. Mm-hmm. I left them up here.
In this house?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the happiest person about that. Mm-hmm. I talked to them about it a lot. And, because I really haven't forgiven myself because I'm a realist. I know what I did, regardless. Whether I was on drugs a lot, people have told me, that's okay. I hear them, I get it. Yeah. But a piece of me, my heart's still broken that I did that to her later.
You know, Maya Angelou always says, when you know better, you do better. Did you know better when you left them here? Did you know then what you were doing?
I think that's why I'm so shameful about it, because the me that's me that you're looking at now mm-hmm. knows better. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know better. Mm-hmm. You know, I went out on tour. And I wasn't getting along with her
and
mom.
And stayed.
I wasn't getting along with her mom. Mm-hmm. And it was this. I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And it was so wrong. And I once thought that thinking was so cool.
Now, it's interesting.
It's so wrong.
You said that being a father changed you. And when I read that, I thought, did it really? Because you continued your life as you wanted it, as you saw it, as you chose it. It felt like for many years without regard for your children. Am I correct or not?
You are.
Okay.
Yeah. I had them, but obviously the drugs got in the way, the lifestyle got in the way. And then Liv, I was with Bebe. She was my girlfriend then. And don't get me wrong, every one of those girls, I loved them dearly. Mm-hmm. When we made love, we cried. Mm-hmm. And after that,
that's good.
And after that, we had a kid.
Yeah, oh, really?
When it was that heavy, there was magic.
Yeah. It never happens. Your seed was planted.
It never happens like that all the time.
Right.
Never crying, and as you climax. Mm-hmm. And that's something I don't think I even told in the book. Never told anybody. That was those four times.
Really?
Whoa, yeah.
Each time you cried, and there was
then
conception.
Then we had a baby.
Really?
It was like, oh, something.
That was something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the babies were born, and Liv,
Well, it's good to be born out of that. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So it was love, beyond all love, you know? And Bebe...
But you were irresponsible. Were you not irresponsible?
I was.
Yeah.
I was. I just hate thinking about myself like that. It hurts right now. I get it. I see the picture.
Yeah.
I can own it.
Yeah.
It just still hurts.
Yeah.
And when I see Liv now and we cry and... You know, I talk about it, not as much as I did when I first got sober.
Yeah.
Because I said, you may never forgive me. Mm-hmm. I would talk like that, and it was something they didn't want to hear. Forgiveness has to be earned. I have to earn it.
Do you think you have yet? Do you think you
have? Oh, I've been there for them. Oh, yeah, we've done this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.